the Yecheskel share. It's also dedicated to all our soldiers. We're keeping us safe. We've reached the 15th chapter of Yecheskel, Mazal Tov. And this chapter is a very short chapter, 9 verses, I believe. That's all. But it's a really interesting chapter because it's really for the first time we have a bit of poetry from the 8 verses, in fact. Not 9, 8 verses. No. 8 verses. 8 verses, but it's interesting in the sense that it's quite poetic, unusual for Yecheskel, and we'll go straight into it. It's, the title of the chapter is The Jewish People Compared to the Fruit of the Vine to Wine. What's that all about? There's a lot of Musa in this chapter, and very interesting chapter. So, first 2 verses. Vayihi dvar Hashem elai lemar. The word of God came to me saying, Yecheskel speaking, Ben Adam, son of man, ma yiyeh eitz hagefen mikol eitz. What becomes of the vine branch in comparison to other trees? Hazmora asher hoya ba'atzei ayar. Particularly, the branch of the vine that grows amongst other trees in the forest. Now, this verse 2, God is asking a rhetorical question to the prophet. This rhetorical question will continue in verses 3 and 4. So here's the background to this chapter. In this chapter, God is going to compare the Jews, particularly the Jews of Yehuda, the southern kingdom of Yehuda, and the Jews of the city of Yerushalayim, to those parts of the vine that have very little value. The nature of the vine is that the key products that is produced can be graded. You've got the wood of the branches of a vine that have got very little value. They're unwieldy and they're too weak to be used in any type of carpentry. The best that really they can be used for, just the branches of the vine, is to throw in the fire and use them as fuel. The second thing that the vine produces is grapes. Grapes have value as fruit, just like other fruits do. But what makes the vine different from everything else is the juice of those grapes. The juice of those grapes is wine. And it is the most valuable product of the vine itself. And this gradation is expressed very interestingly in brachos. What's very interesting about the brachos we make, if people just, you know, when they eat something, they make a bracha, but they don't really pay much attention to what they're saying. But when we make our brachos, when we eat grapes, and we drink wine, we make different brachos. And what's interesting is there's a general rule about making a bracha before you eat something that relates directly to the products of fruit trees. And the rule that applies to every fruit on the planet does not apply to the fruit of the vine, as we'll see in a second. The Meiri, one of the Sephardi commentators, one of the early Sephardi commentators from the 13th century, lived in northern Spain, and he's a true Sephardi commentator. He's not like a lot of the Sephardi commentators are a mixture. They were heavily influenced by the Ashkenazim of France and Germany, but Meiri was not. He's a true to goodness Sephardi commentator, Rishon, one of the early commentators. And he's got a commentary on the Gemara in Brachos, and in his commentary in the Gemara in Brachos on page 35, on page Lamed Hey, Lamed Aleph, he writes as follows: Kol peiros ha'ilam be'mizayin haminim kugon te'enim v'rimanim v'domehen, all fruit trees, whether they are from the 7 particular species that are particular to the land of Israel, like figs and pomegranates, ben shalom mizayin minim, or fruits from other trees, kugon negozim v'tapuchim, like nuts and apples, v'domeyam and similar types of fruits. Well, yotzamahem avroth borei periho eitz. When you eat an apple, you make borei periho eitz. When you eat a pomegranate, you make borei periho eitz. When you eat a nut, you make borei periho eitz. And if you drink the pulp, the juice of these fruits, and you squeeze out some orange juice, or you press some apple juice, or you squeeze out some pear juice, or whatever juice it is from whatever particular fruit it is, you make a lesser brocha, a less stringent brocha, or a less holy brocha, but certainly a lesser brocha. And the brocha you make is shahakal. So if you eat an apple, it's baroi priyo eitz, and if you drink apple juice, you make a regular brocha shahakal, the lowest in the gradations of brochas. The exception to this rule is chutz min ayayin. The exception to this rule is the fruit of the vine. She'af al pi she'agefen koru eitz, even though the fruit of the vine is called a product of a fruit tree, as Yecheskel says here, ma yiyeh eitz ha'gefen. Verse 2 here describes the gefen, the vine, as an eitz, as a tree. Despite the fact that the prophet describes the vine as eitz, the gefen, the vine, is an eitz, nevertheless, and you do make a brocha, borei priho eitz, if you take a bunch of grapes in your hand, and you eat the grapes as a fruit. Nevertheless, when you drink the wine that comes from pressing those grapes, instead of making a lesser brocha, which is shahakol, like you do with the juice of regular fruits, like apples and oranges and whatever else it is, when it comes to wine, you make a more important, you make a unique brocha, borei pri hagefen, the fruit of the vine, indicating its kashibut, indicating that the wine, unlike any other juice that comes out of any other fruit, has got a chashivas, got an importance all of its own. And says the Me'iri, this chashivas of wine, as we know, is expressed in monetary value. Because whilst regular fruit, including grapes and fruit juice, have a fixed and moderate market price, but when it comes to wine, the value of a bottle of wine can rise exponentially, depending on the various market factors. And he goes on, he says, what is even stranger, the brocha borei pri hagefen that you make over wine seems appropriate. After all, pri hagefen, the words pri hagefen, are the fruit, means literally the fruit of the vine. And the fruits of the vine are really grapes, not wine. Wine is something that you've pressed. So really the language of making a brocha borei pri hagefen on wine is grammatically inappropriate. Why isn't the brocha for wine al hayayin, borei pri hayayin, or al hayayin, brocha to Hashem nekenim ha'olam al hayayin? You're making a brocha on wine. You're not making a brocha on the fruit of the vine, which is the grapes. You're making a brocha on the wine. Why isn't the brocha al hayayin? So the Me'iri writes, what Chazal are trying to tell us with this gradation of brochas is that the key product of the vine is not merely grapes, but rather wine. True, the grapes have value, just like any other fruit, and you would make a borei pri or eitz when you eat grapes, the same as you would when you eat an orange, when you eat an apple. But the reason for the creation of the wine, of the vine, in the bria, in the creation of the vine was to produce wine, not to produce fruit, like the creation of an apple tree or an orange tree. The primary products of the apple tree is the apples, not the apple juice. The oranges, not the orange juice. The primary reason for the creation of the vine was to produce wine, not the grapes. Why? Wine is the key product of the vine, and that's why it's called pri hagefen, the fruit of the vine, the essential element that comes out of the vine. And continues the Me'iri, the Jewish people are compared to the vine. Unlike all other fruits, in other words, unlike all other nations, the Jews have the potential to become the ultimate creation, attracting a special brocha. That the nations of the world can get a brocha all of their own, like there's a brocha on the fruit, borei pri or eitz. But there's only one fruit that's got its own special brocha, and that is the Jewish people. That they're like the wine, just like the wine has got its own special bracha, so the Jewish people, they have their own special bracha. So just like Borei Pri HaGefen is made only on wine, the brachas that come to the Jewish people are designed only for them. And he says, as we mentioned earlier in his previous comments on this section, regular fruit has the ability to attain a bracha as well, Borei Pri or Eitz, but can go no further than that. Similarly, the nations of the world are limited in the bracha they can receive. The Jewish people, on the other hand, can go one stage further. If they achieve their potential, they can have their own unique bracha, just like the unique bracha of wine. But here is the downside, says the Meiri. What if the Jewish people don't achieve their potential? Of what use are the Jewish people? If they just remain regular people, regular fruit, regular trees, like the other nations, or even worse, if they just remain like vine branches and don't even advance to the level of other trees or other nations that produce fruit, what is their value at all? So that is what God is asking rhetorically here. And if you read the verse again, this is the way the Meiri understands it. Ben Adam, verse 2 again, just to read it over, now you understand what God's getting at. Ma yeh eitz hagefen. What of what value have the branches of the vine got? These unwieldy, weak bits of wood. Mikol eitz, compared to all the other trees. All the other trees have got are very, very strong, and they've got important wood that can be used for all sorts of things. Hazmara shehoye v'atzeayah, particularly the branch of the vine. These long, wieldy branches, thin, weak branches, compared to the Atzei Hayar, to the trees of the forest. And in verse 3, God continues. God continues now asking the prophet rhetorically, Hayukach mimenu eis lasos lemelocha? Can you take the wood from the branch of the vine and use it for any type of work? Can you, like, in yikhu mimenu yoseit? Can you take it? Can you use the wood of a vine, the thin wood of a vine, the branches of a vine, to make a peg, litlos alav kolkeli, on which to hang a utensil? In other words, it's a rhetorical question. Of course you can't. They're so weak. And again, as the Meiri says, as we mentioned in the previous verse, the vine, which is the Jews, have one purpose and one person only. Purpose only. They're to set an example to the rest of the world. Their example they're supposed to set is of spiritual, moral, and ethical excellence. If they can't do that, then of what use are they? Then they become as useless as the wood of the vines, the branches of the vines that they are compared to, as God indicates in this verse. By asking, what value has the wood of the branches of a vine tree got? After all, that wood is too weak for carpentry. Essentially, that wood of the vine, just like the Jews who don't fulfill the potential, are valueless. So, very, very strong language, but beautifully set out in poetic form. And in verses 4 and 5, God continues. Hine lo'eish nitan la'ochla. Referring to the branches of a vine tree. If it were placed in the fire to be consumed, and both its ends, if you take a branch of a vine and you put both its ends in a fire, and if its inside was charred, hayitzlach lemlocha, could you do anything with it? Could you take a vine branch and you take both ends of the vine branch and put it in fire so the whole thing becomes charred? Can you do anything with it? Has it got any value? Furthermore, hine biyoso somim, when it was whole, lo yeso lemlocha, it couldn't be used for any type of work, any type of carpentry, it was useless. How much less would it have any value when fire has already consumed it? The yichra, the nasa od lamalacha, and it, when it becomes charred, and it has no longer got any value at all for anything. Can't even be used for fuel. It's absolutely useless. So these are God's asking Yechezkel rhetorical questions here. And the nimshel here, the parable, is to the Jewish people. On the one hand, you know, we've got the ability to produce wine, which attracts its own bracha, to be above and beyond anything else that the world can produce. On the other hand, if we're at our lowest common denominator, if we're at our lowest point, we don't even reach the value of a regular tree. Well, at least a regular tree you can use for fuel. At least a regular tree you can use for carpentry. You can make chairs and tables out of it. But the Jewish people, if they don't aspire and don't become what they're designed to become, which is the wine of the world, then what's left is of no value. So here, in verses 4 and 5, particularly in verse 4 here, God asks his final rhetorical question, and in verse 5, God gives his ominous final answer. So here the Abarbanel takes over, and he tells you what's going on here, what God is getting at. Now it's a very, very, this analogy of the Jews to grapes, as we're going to see at the end of the, when we get to the end of the chapter, please God, and we do have a little bit of an epilogue on what this chapter is all about, not necessarily in terms of the text itself, but what it means to us to be Jews in 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and today in our world. It's all about this chapter, really, although it's an allegory and it's beautiful poetry, it's all about expectation. What God expects from the Jewish people. You know, there's the old joke about, can you please choose somebody else for a change? So there's a lot of expectation. We know that on Mount Sinai, for example, when the Jews, they said, Na'aseh v'nishma, right? They said, we'll do it, and we'll have a look and see if it makes any sense. That was their first mistake. Should have read the small print first, Baruch, right? Always read the small print before you sign the contract. The Jewish people signed the contract before they read the small print. And then they realized that the bar's very high. Being Jewish, the bar's very high. And the Pasuk says, Vayanu. When they started reading the book, they took two steps back and said, what have we done? And what have we signed on for? So there's an expectation. And this is where the Abarbanel starts his commentary here. He says, V'ein bo tzorach ki im l'sreifa. He says, it seems that the only intrinsic value that vine branches have, if they don't produce wine, and they don't produce fruit, and they don't produce wine, is for burning, for fuel. V'hu omro hine la'esh, niten la'ochla shnei ketzotzov ochla esh. So God asked rhetorically in verse 4, if these vine branches were placed in the fire, and both of its ends were consumed by fire, and if the rest of it was charred, would they provide any value? Obviously not. And it's a kal v'chomer. If they're of no value when they haven't been burnt by fire, so obviously they have no value when they are burnt by fire. He says, Rotzaloma, Mishnei Kitzosa, Basocha Nocha, Rotzaloma, Vachashe, Yisru Kitzosa, Tocha, Emseosa, Nocha, Eich Yitzlach Limlocha. Once these branches have been burned, of what use are they at all? He says, Kiven be Yoso Tomim, Basholei, because since the vine branches, when they were whole, and in perfect condition, lo ha'yiroi l'malacha, they weren't fit to be used for any useful activity. Kol shekein kishen nisraf, then obviously when they're burnt, suvivo, all around, uketzosa v'socha nocha, then obviously when they're burnt and engulfed by fire and charred, they would be even more useless than they were before. He says, v'inyan ha'machal hazeh, and this is the essence of this parable, as we discussed earlier, he says, Yisrael nimshel legefen. Israel is the vine. Kamosha omar hamishore. Just as David HaMelech said in Tehillim, Gefen Mimitzrayim Tasiya. God uprooted a vine from Egypt. That's what he took out. He took us out. We were a vine. We had the potential. We were a vine, like a young vine branch, with the potential to produce fruit, and eventually to produce the greatest brocha, to become wine, to become unique. And that's in Abavanel's quote in Tehillim, chapter 80, for those that keep track of the verses that I quote. Hinein kein hagefen ba'atzei ayahu Yisrael opiru hu hamotok v'yeinu shu remez lamasel v'atovim hu yain harekach mesameach elokim v'anoshim. Here, what God is saying is that the vine in the trees of the forest refers to Israel, amongst all the other trees, all the other nations. And its fruit is supposed to be sweet, and the wine it produces is a hint to their good deeds, such that it is a perfumier. The Jewish people are the perfumiers to the world. They produce the wine that makes God and humanity rejoice when they perform that, keep the Torah and do their mitzvahs. V'hinei eitz hagefen she'hoya ha'uma lo yitzlach l'melacha. Unfortunately, the eitz hagefen, the branches of the vine that God refers to in this chapter, refers to the actual state of the nation. Lo yitzlach l'melacha. Rotzalom l'devorim ha'malachtuyim ha'mufursot v'ha'mufursomim. Ki hitzlach do ba'emesi avodo lekis lo b'dovaracha. The eitz hagefen, the branches of the vine that God refers to in this chapter, refers to the actual state of the nation, who are not designed for any other work. They were not created to involve themselves or succeed in transitory, artificial, or materialistic pursuits of the world, or to seek fame. Their only success is judged by the divine service that they perform. Yeah. And he says, what are these things? Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasodim. That's what we're created for. Any other achievements are, you know, it could be done by anybody else. That's the wine. Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasodim. That's what we're designed for. Ulechein, he says, therefore, B'yosa nota me'aderach Eloki. When the Jews are diverted from the divine path designated for them, yutan la'esh, they become as useless as vine branches, and yutan la'esh, God will throw them in the fire. V'urem is la'onshim aboim aleihem, and this is a hint to the punishment that will follow them throughout their history. That when they're good, they're good, and but when they're rotten, they're really rotten, and when they're really rotten, then the fire won't be far behind them. Just like their value decreases as a result of a vine branch, the value of a vine branch, if it's not producing fruit, it's not producing wine, at least let it produce fruit, like all the other trees, like all the other nations. But if it's not producing fruit, never mind not producing wine, then what value is it? God says that they'll be chased around by the fire. The fire is destruction. And continues the Abavanel beautifully, he says here, the nimshal here, the parable. V'hinei says in this verse, in verse 5, he says so that the idea, v'hinei shnei ketzotzav ochlo ha'esh. So when God says the idea of these vine branches, the Jews being burnt at both ends, like the Posit says here in verse 5, Shnei Ketzotzav Ochlo Ha'esh. What God says, what would happen if you burn both ends of a vine branch with fire? He says, so the Barbanel says, the idea of these vine branches, meaning the Jews, being burnt at both ends, is something that is described by Yeshayahu, the prophet Yeshayahu, who lived, and about 100 years before Yechezkel was born, Kemosha Omar Aram Mikedim Uplishti Me'ochor. That Yeshayahu in chapter 9 describes as something that has happened before, that God incited Aram, which is Syria, from the east, and the Philistines from the west, for Yochlu Esbenei Yisrael B'chol Peh, and they devoured Israel with every bite of their mouths. And to put matters into perspective, Yechezkel is prophesying at a time when 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan, the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, the other tribes in the west that completed the northern kingdom, Asher Hoyu B'Malchus Ephraim Lochein, they'd all been destroyed and exiled, they are already the two ends of the branch that have already been set on fire. You had the two parts of the northern kingdom. You had the northern kingdom, the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan, and the 7.5 tribes on the western side of the Jordan in the north. Both groups had already been burnt. And that's what God says. I've already burnt the first two. They've already been destroyed and already sent into exile. So that two of your kingdoms have already been consumed by fire. And that's what he means in this verse 5. Shnei ketzotz of ochlo ha'esh. I've already burnt you twice. I've already taken two of your areas and got rid of all the people from it. All the Jews are gone in the north. On the other side of the Jordan, which is modern day Jordan, and western side of the Jordan, which is where the other 7.5 tribes, they're all gone. They've all been burnt. And God comments, V'socho nochor. Inside it was charred. God says, Shuremez liushalayim, Shehoyu be'emsa eretz Yisrael. Inside has all already been charred. Never mind the two ends that have already been completely burnt, which is the two parts of the northern kingdom. The inside of the land of Israel, which is referencing Yerushalayim, Shuremez Yerushalayim, Shehoyu be'emsa eretz Yisrael, that sits inside eretz Yisrael, is already been warned, already been charred, already been, you know, warned about future behavior. Despite the fact that the inhabitants of Yerushalayim have already been charred, because they've been under siege. First they were under siege by the Assyrians. After the Assyrians destroyed the northern kingdom, they came south and they surrounded Yerushalayim, and they put Yerushalayim under a siege, but the Jews escaped that. They were charred once, and now they're being charred again because they're being surrounded by the Babylonians. And they're going to be suffering the four curses, which is something we described in chapter 14, the previous chapter, that they're only charred at the moment, but what they've got to look forward to are the four curses that were described in the previous chapter: famine, natural disasters, the sword, and the plague. Lo lokhu musa. And these people, these Jews, these vine branches that have never managed to produce any fruit, let alone produce any wine, they've never been able to reach their potential. Lo lokhu musa. They didn't get the message from all the tragedies that they've seen around them. They've not got the message from what happened to the northern kingdom. They've not got the message from the fact that they were surrounded by the Assyrian army and escaped. And they haven't got the message now that the Babylonians are on their way, on the march. And so what hope is there for that? Do you think that he says rhetorically to Zechariah, to Yechezkel, do you think these people will ever repent and improve their ways? Look what they've seen. They've never reached their potential. First of all, they've never reached their potential. But apart from the fact they've never reached their potential, they've seen what I do to the Jews that behave like vine branches, become useless, no added value, of no value to me, God says. They're burnt. Two of them are already burnt, two groups. And you've been warned as well. You've been charred. You've already been charred by the Assyrians, and now you're being charred again by the Babylonians, and you still won't pay any attention. So what hope is that? What hope is for these people? Says God to Yechezkel. What am I going to do with these guys? What value are they to me? So God says now, In verse 6, God gives his verdict, his sentence. I can't deal with these guys anymore, God says. Lochain kama Hashem Elokim. Therefore, so says God. Kasher eitza gefen ve'eitza yar. Just like a vine tree amongst the trees of the forest. Asher nesativ la'esh la'ochla, which I have given over to the fire to be consumed. Kein nosati es yoshve Yerushalayim. That's exactly what I'm going to do to the inhabitants of Yerushalayim. So, quite clearly, God's judgment is very clear, and he's got good reason. And I think it's a beautiful poetic analogy of the Eitz HaGefen. The Jewish people are, essentially, we're elastic. Now, Rebbe Zeis Tzadik Livrocha used to say, the Jewish people are elastic. You can take an elastic band, you can stretch it in two directions. Jewish people can be at either end of an elastic band. Either extremely evil or extremely great. They've got the potential for both. It's just a question of what they choose for themselves. So God's judgment for Yerushalayim is clear. Kasher Eitz HaGefen ve'Eitz HaYar. Commenting here on verse 6, God says, Kasher Eitz HaGefen ve'Eitz HaYar Asher Nesativ La'esh. Just like the vine branches among the trees of the forest, which I have already given over to the fire to be consumed, meaning either the two vine branches which have already been over to the fire, which the Malbim says in verse 4, refers to the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and the other half, or the other 7.5 tribes in the west, that completed the northern kingdom of Ephraim, they've both been destroyed by fire. Not literally by fire, but they've been destroyed and exiled. Or Rashi says, the two vine branch which have already been given over to the fire to be consumed, refers to what has already taken place in Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Two of its end were consumed by fire already, meaning Yerushalayim has already suffered two exiles. Firstly, when King Jehoiakim, if you remember this story, in terms of Yechezkel, where we're up to in his story, is we're 5 years away from the destruction of the temple. But there's already been two, by the time Yechezkel is speaking, there's always, Yerushalayim hasn't yet been destroyed by the Babylonians, but there has been already two waves of exiles into Babylonia. The Babylonians have taken two waves of exiles. Number one, says Rashi, when King Jehoiakim was killed and many inhabitants of Yehuda and Yerushalayim were exiled in the first wave of the Babylonian exile, which was between 440 and 434 BC, in which some of the royal family and the nobles were exiled. And secondly, King Jehoiakim, a later king who rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, he was exiled as well. If you remember, he got himself into real trouble. He was imprisoned. At that time, Nebuchadnezzar took many of the craftsmen, many of the artisans, and many of the prophets, including Yechezkel, into exile as well, in a second wave of exile, which took place in about the year 433, which is 11 years before the destruction of the temple, and about 6 years before this prophecy. So 5 years before the destruction of the temple. So you can read this, that when God says in this verse, Kasher Eitz HaGefen Be'Eitz HaYar Asher Nesativ La'esh, these people don't learn their lessons. I've already sent Jews into the fire. Either means the northern kingdom, the two parts of the northern kingdom, or the fact that there's already been two exiles in the southern kingdom. So whatever way you understand the two exiles, the two burnings have already, there's been two burnings already occurred to the Jewish people. But they're not prepared to pay attention. So God says at the end of the verse, Kein nosati es yoshve Yerushalayim. So what choice do I have, says God? I have to decree the same fate on the remaining citizens of Yerushalayim, which, as we know, is going to take place in short order. Now, in historical terms, it's going to take place tomorrow, but in actual terms, is going to take place in 5 years' time, as we've been discussing throughout the book. The last king of Yehuda, King Sidkio, and the rest of the remaining people in Yerushalayim, as it says in chapter 10, verse 2, Umalofach Chof Nechoch Gachle Eish, Mi Beinos Lekruvim Uzroka La'ir. God tells the angel Gabriel, fill your hands with coals, fiery coals from the Kruvim, from the cherubs, and cast them upon the city. So that's what's coming up next, forthcoming attractions. The Jews don't learn. They'd rather be fodder for the fire. They'd rather be vine branches of no use to man or beast than reach the potential that they've got. At least reach the potential of being a fruit. If not reaching the potential of being wine and attracting the special bracha of God. They weren't interested in either. So God says, what can I do? What can I do with these people? The only thing I can do is do to them what I've already done, either to the northern kingdom or to various members of the southern kingdom already. And God continues in verse 7. V'nosati esponai bohev. So God says, I'm going to set my countenance. When God says v'nosati esponai bohev, it's not nice. Right? It's not like God's going to take a good look at you and it's going to be nice. But v'nosati esponai bohem always is an expression of bad news. So v'nosati esponai bohem, God says, I'll set my face, my countenance against them. Meho'esh yotzo'u, from the fire they have emerged or exited. V'ho'esh tochlein, but now the fire will devour them. Vidatem ki ani Hashem, and you will know that I am in control, I am God. Vesumi esponai bohem, when I direct my face, my countenance against them. Now this is although it appears to be very straightforward, this is a extremely complicated verse. Extremely complicated. A miracle today, we've got through seven verses in one shir. I think it's six verses in one shir, and we've read the seventh. It's like a record for this shir. But this we have to stop here and take track. Anybody got any questions at this point? No? Good. We have to take a step back, because the allegory up till now has been very clear, it's very beautiful, it's very poetic, yeah, very easy for everybody to understand. At this point, it becomes very, very complex, this verse. God says, V'nosati esponai bohem, I will set my countenance against them. Meaning, very simply, the fate of Yehuda, the fate of the southern kingdom, the fate of Yerushalayim, and the fate of the Beis HaMikdash, the first temple, is set in stone. The Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim have been given many chances to do teshuva over a period of at least 300 years and turn themselves from useless vine branches that produce no added value to the world into a blessed wine that represents allegorically the spiritual, moral, ethical excellence they were designed to display to the world as the Oral Agoyim. We were supposed to be the Oral Agoyim, the light unto the nations, which we are, to a certain extent. You know, we're not commenting on the current situation, but we've demonstrated many times in our history that we're the Oral Agoyim. And says God here, this is the phrase that tangles up all the commentators, that God says, Meho'esh yotzo'u v'ho'esh tochlein. From the fire, the Jewish people emerged or exited, but now the fire will devour them. What does Yechezkel mean when he makes the statement, Meho'esh yotzo'u? From the fire they emerged. He's talking about the Jewish people emerging from a fire. So, anybody want to make an educated guess the point Yechezkel is making here? What does it mean that the Jews, the Jewish people, or the nation of Israel, Meho'esh yotzo, they emerged from the fire. Anybody? No? No. Not your best. Not your best. Yeah, but he says that may ha eish yotzol when they okay, yeah, you're on the right track. Yeah, let's just look at the about. Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Let's look at the about Benel. His straightforward analysis here. The Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim already had a stark warning about what might be coming their way. So God says, "May ha'esh yotzol." From the fire they have emerged or exited unscathed. Meaning, says the Abar Benel, when King Sancheirif, the king of Assyria, conquered the 10 northern tribes and sent them into exile, as we discussed just now, he then headed south and he surrounded Yerushalayim at the time of King Yechizkiel, Ezekiah. One of the greatest kings in Jewish history, in the top three being probably, or top four being David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, Yotam, and Chizkiyo HaMelech. So at the time of Chizkiyo, when Chizkiyo was the king, Sancheirif conquered and exiled the northern 10 tribes and then tried his luck in the south. His intention was to conquer the city and send all the inhabitants of Yerushalayim to exile. Fortunately, as Mr. Barrett pointed out, the Jews of Yerushalayim at the time of Chizkiyo, and also at the same time as the great prophet Yeshayahu, Isaiah, on the first night of Pesach, the entire Syrian army were killed miraculously by our old friend Gabriel, Malach, the angel Gabriel, and Yerushalayim escaped the clutches of Sancheirif and the Assyrians. Says the Abar Benel, that's what Yechezkel is saying here. May your eish yotzol. You've already been given you're like a cat. You've got 9 lives. You've already been saved once from total destruction. Unfortunately, says the Abar Benel, they didn't learn that lesson. The ideal takeaway from that salvation, that miraculous salvation on the first night of Pesach, which is essentially why we say on the first night of Pesach in Chutz La'aretz, right? Not here in Israel, but on Chutz La'aretz we have a song we sing in the second half of the Haggadah, Vayhi b'chatzi ha'layla, right? So everyone thinks that's the Vayhi b'chatzi ha'layla is talking about when we exited Egypt. So it's not. It's talking about what happened to the Assyrian army outside Yerushalayim on first night Pesach. So you'd have thought that the Jewish people might have learned a lesson about that. And when the Babylonians came, they said to themselves, we need to be saved again. We need to do teshuva. So God says, you escape once from the fire, you're not going to do it again. Says God. Another destroyer is coming. Not Sancheirif this time, Nebuchadnezzar. And this time, God's going to do nothing to stop him from conquering Yerushalayim and burning down everything of value to the ground. That's the first opinion, very straightforward opinion, and that's the opinion we got from Rabbi Dr. Barrett there. But what's very interesting is the Gemara in Yuma. Or not the Gemara in Yuma. We'll not come to the Gemara in Yuma yet. We'll look at the Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara in Baba Basra on Daf Ayin Teth on page 79 makes the following observation. And this is where we get into the realms of Musar as well in this chapter. The Gemara says, Rabbi Umar, Rabbi Yehuda, Maran. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab, regarding anyone who separates himself from the words of the Torah, a fire will consume him. And it says, as it says in the verse in Yechezkel, in chapter 15, verse 7, V'nosati esponai bohem meha'esh yatzol v'esh tochlei. I will set, God says, I will set my face against them. Out of the fire they emerged, and the fire will eventually have devoured them. Says the Gemara, the Torah is likened to fire. If you look in the book of Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, there's actually many verses in the Tanakh. As we'll see later when we look at the Ben Yoyoda, there are many verses in the Tanakh that compare the Torah to fire. But the Gemara quotes a verse from Yirmiyahu, chapter 23, verse 29. Hallo, called God speaking to the prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah. Hallo, called Dvorai Ko'esh Ne'um Hashem. Like rhetorically. On my words, my Torah, not like fire, says God. And says the Gemara, the verse in Yechezkel teaches us this. May ho'esh yotzol, out of the fire they emerged. Says the Gemara, the word yotzol refers to those who separate themselves or depart from the fire of the Torah. And is referring to the Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim who rejected the Torah. They lived by the Torah for hundreds of years, and in the last 250-300 years of the Southern Kingdom, or of Israel, and partially the time of the Southern Kingdom and the Combined Kingdom, but certainly the last 250 years, they rejected the Torah, they rejected the fire of the Torah. Consequently, the Pasuk says, and the Prophet says, V'ha'esh tochlein. The fire that they rejected is going to come back and consume them and devour them. They will be consumed by the fire of their enemies, which, had they kept the Torah, the fire of the Torah would have protected them. But they rejected the fire of the Torah, and it's going to come back and haunt them. That's the Gemara. Now listen to the Ben Yehoyada. We got time for the Ben Yehoyada. Maybe we've got time for the Ben Yoyoda. Yeah, let's see if we've got time. We've got time for half of the Ben Yoyoda. Listen to what the Ben Yoyoda says here on this Gemara. This is fascinating. A real deep insight into this Gemara. He says, V'kosha, Havalei Lameima Pirusho Mai Meho Eishitz Yotzol. Yechezkel said in our verse, Meho Eishitzol, from the fire they emerged. Meaning the Jews. They emerged from the fire, they exited from the fire. And he says, and the Gemara describes the Torah as the fire, and the Jews of Yehuda as being the ones who are exited, deserted it. But how are we to truly understand the word yotzol, that the Jews exited, or emerged, or left, or deserted the Torah? What does that mean? V'nirali, v'siyata dishmaya, says the Ben Ish Chai. It appears to me, with the help of heaven, the Omer about Rabbeinu Zal, that if you look in the Zohar, in chapter 91 of the Zohar, Yisrael Nishmosehem Mushroshim Be'osios HaTorah. All the souls of Israel are rooted in the letters of the Torah. In other words, the letters of the Torah make up your name. So all the letters of the Torah are used, all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet are used in the Torah, so your name is in the Torah somewhere. Combination of letters in the Torah will create your name. Mushroshim Ba'osios HaTorah. All Jewish souls are embedded within the framework of the letters of the Torah. Ulechein Lo Yesh Bar Yisrael. And therefore there is no Jew, She'ein Remez Lishmo Ba'Torah, who is not referenced in the Torah. No Jew, born, past, present, future, whose life expectancy, life goals, life aims, life potential, everything about every single Jew, it's impossible that they're not hinted at in the Torah. Ulechein Omar Meho'esh Yotzol. And that is what Yechezkel is saying here. May ha'esh yotzol. As a result of the behavior of the Jews of Yerushalayim, they have been excised from the protective fire of the Torah that contains their names. while you are alive and keeping the Torah, the fact that you, the letters of your name are contained in the Torah, so the Torah protects you. Once you desert the Torah, the letters that make up your name, that are in the Torah, are, so to speak, yotzol, they're thrown out. And he says, remember, as the Gemara said, that the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, who said, "Halo ko dvarai ko esh nom Hashem," all the words of my Torah are not all the words of my Torah like fire, says God. So he says the Ben Ish Chai, that while you're keeping the Torah, so you're neshama, your soul, you're indestructible, divine soul, immortal soul, that bears your name. So it's made up of letters in the Torah. So there's a protection for you from the Torah. But if you reject the Torah, so meho esh yotzol, the Torah is a fire, and it will throw you out. It will throw you out of the Torah. Your name will be excised from the Torah. And as a result of that, v'ho esh tochlein, then you'll be consumed by others. Other fires will be able to consume you, meaning that your enemies will be able to overcome you. Says the Ben Ish Chai. V'od, furthermore, he says, Nira li b'siyata dishmaya, it appears to me again with the help of heaven, the Omru bat Rabba Seinuzal, that our rabbi said in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sotah on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, page 17a, those that learn Gemara Sotah with me, we'll come to this Gemara in the next few months, I should think. The Gemara says there, Dorash Rabbi Akiva, Ish v'isha zochu, shchina b'neihem. Rabbi Akiva says, if a man, an ish, and a woman, an isha, merit reward through a faithful marriage, the divine presence rests between them. Shchina b'neihem, the divine presence rests between them. Because the word ish and isha are almost identical. The word ish, which is a man, and the word isha, which is a woman, are almost identical. The difference between them is the middle letter, yud, in the word ish, aleph, yud, shin. So there's an extra letter there, yud. And the final letter, hey, of the word isha. So you've got the extra letter, yud, in the word ish, and the extra letter, hey, in the word isha. These two letters can be joined to form the name of God and spell the word Yud-Heh, which is the name of God. And what you're left with is two same words, the Aleph-Shin, Aleph-Shin. So you take the Yud out of Ish, and you take the Heh out of Isha. So if God's in the marriage, if it's a life based on the laws of God, so Ish and Isha, man and woman, Shechina b'neihem, God is in their lives. But if due to different immoral behavior, they do not merit reward, the divine providence departs, the yud departs from the word ish, and the hey departs from the word isha, leaving the words of the letters aleph and shin, which spell the word fire, and the fire will consume them. Omar Rava, says the Gemara, Ude isha adifa midi ish. Rava says, and the fire that consumes an isha, a woman, will be stronger than and more immediate than the fire which consumes an ish, a man. Gemara says, my time. Huh? Why is the woman subject to, why is she going to be consumed if God is not in her life, in the marriage, if there's no yud hey between an ish and an isha? So that all they're left with is fire. Why is it that the woman comes out worse? My timer. Hai Mitzarev, says the Gemara of Hai Lo Mitzarev. The letters Aleph Shin in the word Isha are adjacent to form the word Esh. But in the word Ish, the Aleph and the Shin are not joined. The letter Yud is written between the Aleph and the Shin. So you got the word Isha. So the letters, you spell the word Isha, Aleph, Shin, Hey. So the word Aish is already there It's already actually contained in the name. But when it comes to the man, the Ish, Aleph, Yud, Shin, you've got to take the Yud out. You've got to take God out of the marriage to create the word Ish. Says Vehine, Afal Pisha Holid Nola, Venotza Mizera Ha Ish, Vizera Isha Yotzala Aveh, Ha Olam Min Ha Isha Mi Bitna. And even though a child is born and created in the first instance from the seed of man, nevertheless, the fetus gestates within the woman until at birth it is the fruit of the woman's womb that eventually emerges into the air of the physical world from the woman's womb. And that is what Yechezkel is saying here. It is from the Eish, the woman, whose name contains the word fire. From the woman, Yotso'u, that a human being emerges into the world. And it is that same Eish, that same fire, that brought the child into the world, that will consume it if it leaves the way of the Torah. So the Kabbalistic end to the Shir. Amazing what he says here. Mei ha'esh yotzol. That's about the birth of a human being. Mei ha'esh yotzol. It comes from the woman. The fire of the woman. Mei ha'esh yotzol. And it comes out into this world. But it comes out into this world with the esh, the fire of Torah within it. But if it rejects that fire, if it rejects that Torah, then that same fire that produced it will consume it if it leaves the way of the Torah. So that is the Kabbalistic approach to this verse. I don't know how to describe it. Kabbalistic is the way to describe it. Approach to this verse, exactly what a deeper message, what Yechezkel is saying. Mei ha'esh yotzol. Interesting. And the one opinion that we haven't dealt with, which we'll deal with next week in verse 7, is the opinion of the Chidah, Rav Chaim David Azulai. Amazing drosha he's got here on this verse, exactly what Yechezkel is being told by God here, not just about the Jews of Yerushalayim, what's going to happen to them, what isn't going to happen to them, but also a very deep Musa, ethical message for every single Jew. So that's what we'll be doing next week. And then all we've got after that is one verse. We'll have almost finished. We almost finished the whole chapter in 1 week. Miracle. But we've still got to do the Chidah. We'll finish the Chidah next week. And then we'll move on to chapter 16. Okay, thank you very much for taking part and being here. Hold on. There's a chat here. Who's chatting to me? Who could possibly... Sorry. Thoughts. Scary thoughts. Scary thoughts. Scary thoughts. It's going to get scarier, unfortunately, when we see the Chidah and we see the last verse in the chapter. Thank you all very much for taking part and being such good sports, listening to me again. If I was you, I'd be sick of me by now. But have a great week. In any case, some of you I'll see in the morning. Please God, for those of you that come to my shiur in the morning, we're back in Brenner live by satellite. No doubt Rob will find a parking space without any problem at all. And we'll have to struggle over there. Jeff and... he's gone. Okay. But have a great day. Have a great week. I'll see you same time, same place. In health and happiness, please God. Next week, same time, same place. Kol Tov.